Starting to record from this part on, so Shui, you're okay. All right, so I want to wrap up our discussion of Tol Eitz Chavavanecha, and then I want to move into Eitzai Vavanai Aninotel. And from there, if we can, I want to talk a little bit about the distinction between Sada Asiyah and in the next Chabura, discuss this distinction that doesn't appear in our Sugya, but in contrasting Sugyas, the distinction between Yorid Bershot and Shalom Bershos. So that's the agenda. Yoni, professor. All right, I muted Yoni for now. I know Yoni has a comment he wants to make, so I'm going to wait for but I'll let him get his comment in after I just mention this quickly. So we saw three shitos in Yochalom Artol Yitzchav Avanecha, whether the Bala Bias could demand that the Yorid undo the improvement, to reverse the improvement. We saw the Rif, who argued by symmetry that the Bala Bias could generally say Tol Yitzchav Avanecha. That was the first shita. Okay, so I'll unmute you. That the Bala Bias could generally say Tol Yitzchav Avanecha. Last time I mentioned that that's really important because that undercuts a lot of the force of the din of Yorid, right? If the Bala Bias is not forced to accept the Hana, then there's really not much of a chiddush in our sugya. So that was the risk position. The Bala Mor didn't like it. Bala Mor said that the Bala Bias cannot force the Yorid to reverse the improvement, but he did allow for one exception. He said, Vadai hecha dahavah. This is like Mitnick's clearly and absolutely right point. Vadai hecha dahavah hahu binyan shelo keroy lebala karka v'les be shum hana ili demit boilel mivnei delavka hu binyana kigon zu mistaver dematzim leitoleitz levavanecha dahalo mahani levelamidi. The Balamor did allow for this exception where the Bala Bias is not benefiting at all, that the Bala Bias could compel the Yorid to reverse it. So the Bala Mor allowed for Tol Eitz Chavavanecha in some cases, but generally that the Bala Bias is stuck having to pay for the benefit. The Ramban had a third shita. The Ramban offered a distinction between Asada Ha'asuya Lita and Asada She'ena Asuya Lita. In his mind, if it's Asada Ha'asuya Lita, then the Bala Bias cannot demand that the improvement be reversed. If it's a Sadeh She'eino Asuya Lita, the Bala Bias could demand for the reversal of the Hana. Those are the three shitas we surveyed last week in our last Chabura. I want to just mention one further makor here. The Meiri commenting on this discussion on Kuf Aleph Amid Aleph says, He prefaces the discussion of Tol Eitz Chavavanecha just with this clause, Lo nispayes hanotea b'mashe shamulo. So can he claim Eitz Chavavani aninotel? And similarly, Lo nispayes baal b'mashe chayvu litain. Right, so if the Bala Bias didn't want to pay the amount that the Bezin tells him to pay, and he says, Akor ilancha. I just thought it's interesting that the Meiri views this whole sugya of Tol Eitz Chavavanecha Eitzai Vavani Aninotel as a bidi eved in a case where neither party is willing to accept, or one of the parties is not willing to accept the shuma, like the Yadol HaTachton amount, Yadol Yon amount. It sounds like l'chatchila, the Meiri thinks the resolution should be the Bala Karka should pay the requisite amount, whether it's Al Yona, Tachtona, whatever it is. And he says, if lo nispayes, if whatever reason he's not willing to accept the mount, then we get into this discussion of Tol Eitz Chavavanecha. But it sounds like the preferred solution is that just the parties agree on some payment for it. Then in his discussion of whether the Baal HaSadeh can say, reverse the Hanar, Tol Eitz Chavavanecha, he endorses that view. And he says, so he likes the idea that the Baal HaSadeh can generally say Tol Eitz Chavavanecha for exactly the reason that makes so many people uncomfortable in the sugya, right? He says a person shouldn't be compelled to have to develop and build his property against his will, right? If somebody does, someone's bone or notea against the will of the Baalim, the Baalim should have the last say about how their property is developed. And so for that reason, he endorses the view that the Baal HaSadeh can generally say Tol Eitz Chavavanecha. I think that's pretty reasonable. Now, there is one major exception to this whole question of reversibility. This is what we ended with last time. This came out of the Rivash and the Ma'arit. They said if the benefit is not reversible, what happens in a case where there's no way to undo the benefit? You had a vineyard, you had abandoned the vineyard for the year and somebody else came and developed it and worked it, etc. Gabe, you want me to go back to that point for a second? So Gabe wants us to go back to the Meiri.
Yeah, could you clarify? I understand both principles, but I don't understand how they square together. If you think you can't be go for somebody to invest in his land, why should it matter if it's a Soyalika?
Okay, so you're saying because over here, are you sure the Meiri is limited to a Sada Soyalita? Let's see. Miri says, Lo nispayes hanote masha shamalo, hein besada asuyalita, hein besada sheina asuyalita. Bama harini yoker ilanos, ein shamalo. Lo nispayes bal b'masha chavulitain. My impression is that this Miri is true both for sada asuyalita and sada sheina asuyalita. Now, let's see. Yeah, I think for the Meiri, it's like the Rif's position, maybe even stronger than the Rif's position, that whether it's a Sada Asiyalita or a Sada Shein Asiyalita, the Baal HaBayis has the right to reverse it.
Okay, sorry for that.
All right, Gabe. So, I mean, yeah, I think that really undermines the force of like the Chiddush of the Yorid Sigya. Unless you think this exception that, you know, in cases where it's irreversible, like you hold like the Rivash and the Ma'arit, so like they talk about the case where somebody comes and works your vineyards and they have all these profits, they generate all these profits for you. So you're stuck having to pay for the profits because you can't just say undo the benefit that you conferred upon me, right? The guy already harvested all your grapes and whatnot. So you can see here the Ma'arit had said, if it's a case of Kfar Ahanu Masav, then you're going to be forced to pay. And then Asivas and Shinvav ran with this idea. He said, the only time you could say Tol Eitz Chavavanecha is Dafka B'makam SheYachal Likach HaShavach La'atzmo, then Yachal Lomar Lokein. Like the case of Akor Ilancha, the Yachal Lenoto B'makam Acher. And we notice here, this is like real reversibility. So like, you could think of a case someone shovels your walk for you when it snows. There's no way to be oker the shevach and put it somewhere else, right? You don't, even if you were to undo the shoveling, it wouldn't magically clear the yoreid's path, right? So in any case where there's not going to be some symmetrical benefit recovered by the yoreid through undoing the benefit he conferred, they think you're going to be stuck paying. So that puts Yoreid back on the map in a significant way. Sometimes you read these sugyas, right? And you kind of oscillate from extremes, right? So if you have the Meiri's view of the Gemara that, you could always demand that the Yoreid reverse the benefit and not pay, then, you know, that mitigates the Chiddush of Yoreid. You're not forced to accept anything against your will. But then if you take the Ma'arit and the Nesivis, that puts Yoreid back on the map, right? Because in a lot of cases, you won't be able to reverse the benefit. Somebody cleans your windshield, right? You can't tell them to undo it, even if you're going to sprinkle dirt on it, because it's not going to restore the benefit to his windshield. So if you take this qualification of the Nesivis, then the Sug of Yoreid gets its teeth back. Hadin, you have a hand on this, or
no? Yeah, I lowered it because I was saying that it didn't seem like reversibility, at least in terms of framing it in terms of the Baal. We don't really care about the Baal by its reversibility. We care about the Poel's reversibility. But then you said exactly what I was going to say, so I lowered my hand.
Exactly. It's not just about whether you could undo the benefit to the Baal Bayis. It's about whether undoing the benefit to the Bala Bais allows the Yoreid to recover the, you know, the Shevach that he convert. You see that? Go ahead.
I mean, that this, obviously, like the payment to the Yoreid isn't necessarily, like, as we've mentioned before, doesn't have to be tied in, but this would seem to approach, like, seem closer to the side that we care about the Shevach to the Bala Bais and not the value of the labor. Because obviously, he, like, we're not talking about the recovery of the labor Shevach or the labor cost. But, like, so he planted a tree. So can he use that? Can he now use that tree, or can we pick up the gazebo or whatever and put it in his backyard?
I think that's a very good idea. Meaning earlier we were discussing this question whether like the labor cost is part of the hutzos, right? That was one of the first questions you raised in the sigya. And here it sounds like clearly that labor cost is not part of the recovery of the shevach, right?
Yeah.
Because the labor expenditure is wasted. There's no way to recover that. Even if you could be oker the ilanos and notam b'makom acher, like the labor cost is still gone forever. Yeah, 100%. Adam, you have a hand, or are you going to make this point?
I was going to make that point.
Okay. Baruch Shekivanti. Okay. Now I want to move into the point that we closed with on Thursday, and that was this question of, does the Yoreid have some sort of property claim in the Bala Bais's Sada, right? What kind of claim does the Yoreid have through his improvement? Is it just that he provided some sort of service and it's wrong for the Bala Bais to benefit from his service? Or are we conceiving of this in terms of the Yoreid having some bona fide property claim inside the Bala Bais's Rishos? So here, let me just get this point, and then I'll take Yoni's hand. Looks like Yoni's driving somewhere. Zolt, where are you going? Yoni, where are you going?
Play disc golf.
Nice.
You're doing what?
Disc golf. It's like a form of, like, it's like a frisbee golf. It's like frisbee, like, golf.
You're doing this, like, for fun? Like, or you have to?
I'm doing it for fun. That's a couple of...
Yoni, you could be more appropriately dressed for disc golf. I'm just saying.
Oh, wow.
Actually,
you could be wearing a tank top.
You could be more
appropriately dressed. I'm in the wrong climate for that. Our climate for that.
Sound. All right. Zolt, I'm going to take your question in a second here. The point is, I want to just figure out whether the Yoreid has this kind of property claim in the tree or in the building that he built in the other person's Rishus. And I think just the sources that take a stand on this is Machlokes between the Rush and the Nesivis, so the Rush citing the Ravid. The Ravid says that in a case where the Yoreid is not able to take back his Eitzim V'Avonim, okay? So in a case where he's not able to say Eitzai V'Avonim Ani Notel, Ein Shalim Lo, El Yeshe Bo Ad She Yitein Yitziyosa. In a case where the Yoreid cannot recover his materials or reverse the benefit he conferred, he has this affirmative right to sit inside the structure that he built or to benefit from the structure that he built, either until he's paid adequate compensation. I think that's the best way to translate here. Actually, Yitin Yitziyosev, until he's given full compensation. So what do you make of this? What do you make of the shita of the Ravid?
It's like we spoke about at the beginning of the sugya about, like, the Lockean generation of I'm forgetting the exact phrasing, generation of, like, a property right by working on it. But this is, like, seems to really be, like, we'd have to go through our bundle and see, like, which is this a full ownership right? Is this, like, some sort of weird partial ownership right? But like absent payments, like maybe the payment is like a payoff for the property right that you've generated by the improvement.
Yeah, that's right. To me, this sounds very much like the Yorid has this real property claim in the thing that he created, which entitles him to live there and take up residence and benefit from it.
Is that what this means? Or is he just suggesting this is a form of like Avid Inish Dina Lanavshe and Tapas Bumas Sinan, that he's just like collecting payment in his way and so he can't be co-facing that with a guy who's like, can't go into his bank account, but you can like benefit some other part of his property and this is the way to do it.
Because, yeah. because a regular poel doesn't generate this type of like liberty, right? Like if you don't pay me my teaching wages, I can't go live in your backyard.
Right, right. I mean, like even here, Zildi, I think Adin's right. Like you don't get the sense that it's like, oh, benefit from the guy's stuff until he pays you off. It says Yeshe Bo Acheitin Yitziosa, right? It sounds like you have some more precise targeted claim in the structure that you built as distinct from his other assets. And that's brought, I think that
also if it was other interesting in an option, you'd expect, maybe this is what someone just said, so sorry if I'm repeating, but you'd expect them to subtract the value of living there at every point until, you know, the guy paid you, right? Here it sounds like you're sitting there and it's not costing you anything.
That's right. I think it's a really good deal. This is the formulation that I just walked away from. We're not saying that you should live there as payment for the service, but it sounds like you retain your property claim to the thing until the balabais buys it out from you. Right, Shua? That's the point that you're getting at?
Yeah, exactly.
100%. And then when you contrast that with the Nasivis, who says, if it's a case where he's supposed to pay you off. This generates like a real tvias mamon. And he says, then he asks, does it make sense to say that you should live there? He says, no. He raises this possibility that you might say sheyeshev ad sheyala haschiros kithimosav. This is the alternative theory, right? Maybe just let him say that he lives there, let the yored live there until he accumulates in benefits the equivalent of what he conferred. He says ena menasvara sharei hotzi maosav kaachas v'yakabel protrot. Doesn't make sense that he made a lump sum investment or lump sum expenditure. And then he's going to get it paid back piecemeal. And he cites the Rosh B'Shem HaRavid and disagrees with that, right? He says, the Ravid says, Yeshu Ba'achi Yitain Yesi Yosef, and that's inconsistent with the Nasivis' own view, the Yardin L'Nachas of Mishalman Lo. So to me, it actually sounds like the Rosh B'Shem HaRavid holds that there's some legitimate property right that the Yorid has in the structure that he built, in the trees that he planted, that belongs to the Yorid, at least in part, until the Balabais buys out his chelek. Whereas, and for the Nasivis, what's going on here is something very different. For the Nasivis, this is just a means of forcing compensation. So you really, the real remedy is Yardin L'Nechas of a Mishalman Lo, right? Extracting full payment from the Balabais. So I think that seems to be a very fundamental machlokes here, about whether we conceive of the Yorid as having these affirmative property rights within the boundaries of the Baal Hasada. Okay, so let's take some comments on this. Adam, then Zacharia have hands on this.
It sort of reminds me, the Gemara discusses, not this Gemara, but a Gemara discusses, I forget where, I think Baba Kama, if you give someone like a piece of cloth, like a tailor piece of cloth, and he is koneh the cloth as he works on it, then you have to then buy back the product from him at the end.
Yeah, uman koneh b'shvach kli, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a really good paradigm. We're going to talk about that a little later on. Some achronim, really think of the yored sigya in equivalent terms to the uman koneh b'shvach kli sigya. Some Achronim argue, and this is really fascinating, that if anything, even if you hold Ein Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, you'll agree in the Yored case that he is Kona B'Shvach Kli, because it's a little counterintuitive. They think that there's something about agreeing to the service that makes Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli less plausible. Mm-hmm. But it's a non-contractual relationship, like where you force your way into somebody else's rishus, then it makes more sense to structure it. You have a real chelik in the asset.
There's a parallel distinction in Chezkas Habatim between that exact distinction appears in terms of whether you have the adverse possession works, but if you have a prior, you know, relationship that preempts any possibility of establishing machzakas.
Yeah, like Shutfin, right? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, Shutfin. Anybody who has a relationship with the object that would seem to indicate it wasn't sold to him is not able to avail himself of the presumption that it was sold to him that possession confers.
Isn't that just an evidence question, not like a
right? No, it is an evidence question, but I think it's trading on the same, I think it's actually in this case trading on the same kind of intuition.
Maybe. Yeah, in the Bava Basra question, like for example, in secular law, let's see if Shua remembers his law. Shua, do you remember the elements for adverse possession?
I mean, it's mostly statutory, but it's like 10 years, but the guy has to know that you're there. Yeah. It has to be like offensive. There's some
fun. It's gotta be adverse, notorious.
Notorious, right. Which means they know about it.
Adverse
could go either way.
And inconsistent with the owner's like ownership or something like that.
Right.
But when you have these like shutfa, socher, that's all consistent with the owner's ownership.
I mean, yeah.
It's very similar to the relationship between Biggie Smalls and hip hop. Just want to say.
That's exactly what I was going to say. So, but just to kind of, that's cute. He just liked the word notorious. So he jumped on it. But
also adverse, like Biggie took over hip hop. All right, we're done.
Anyway,
sorry,
that's cultural appropriation if I've ever seen any, but
sure, you don't know anything about rap.
Yeah, I know that you don't know anything about rap is the extent that I know about rap. But anyway, what I was going to say, I think Cole's point that it's like, it's similar to Cheskas is on point for two reasons, right? There's the kind of like elemental thing that we're talking about here, like an assertion of ownership that requires like invading someone else's space in a technical sense. And then it's also, I think, maybe not geschmack for sugya, but would just highlight like one of the distinctions really could just be karka metaltalin, right? Like the way your kona karka is through these types of actions, right? Chazaka or like, parat, like these are like acting on the land, which is not just like not the way you're kona metaltalin, right? Uman kona b'shach kli is like a big chiddush in how you go about like shafting a kinyan. So that's just like another, I think, probably like base level reason to think about them slightly different.
Yeah. This is a good point. This is a good point. We'll look at this question also, like Zorea Sadeh Hefker is like a big, it's like a famous Yushalmi. Whether you could gain property rights just through like being mashpiach. This is like that's like this nexus to kinyanim, which we'll get into in a little bit. Yeah, very, very good point. Zachariah, you had a hand on this?
Yeah, just like I kind of wonder how like mechudesh this rivet is. And I don't know, I think it's pretty straightforward. Like these are all the Poel's raw materials, and he put them in this spot, and he's only presuming to transfer it to the Baal HaKarka if the Baal HaKarka agrees to pay him. Okay, granting he's violating his space, his airspace, whatever, but, you know, I think this kind of just along the lines of what you hinted to before, as in, like, by an Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli, there's already agreement. The Uman has ceded all rights, all claims to what's going on here, just providing a service. By this guy, he's before any agreement has been made, he might as well be viewed as, you know, just an equal and separate partner, just someone who comes with his own materials and nothing has been transferred.
I hear the argument. I would say the counter argument is, you know, and I guess this is one of the major differences between the way the halacha conceives of it and how like your American layperson or even legal expert thinks of it, is that, you know, the counter argument is that it's just impossible to get over the trespass, right? It's like, great. And even in halachic terms, the kinyan chatzer, right? So you put your stuff in my backyard. You built something in my property. You know, you could pump up the kinyan chatzer component of it. So I'm kone when you put it in my backyard. And you could also pump up it's my land component of it, right? So like, you know, you don't have to get into kol mechubra lekarka kekarka. And so, you know, if you're bone churva, like, you know, does it get sucked into the karka in those terms? But I agree with you. There's one intuition, one way of looking at it is in terms of whose materials was it, whose labor was it, et cetera, et cetera. In which case you'll say it's all shell, the mashbiach, the yorid. But the other intuition is like whose airspace are you in? And you could formalize that in terms of kinyan chatzer. You could formalize it in terms of kol mechubra lekarka kekarka. And that would pump up the Baal Hasada's rights to it, right? Maybe the answer is they're a kind of shutzfin on the, but even that is a substantive conclusion. That's like a pretty interesting conclusion of halacha that, you know, we're going to say they're shutzfin rather than viewing like one party as prevailing entirely on this, right? And pukhazi that, like in a different system of law, like in the American system, like the yored would get nothing. Right? The yored just deemed to be a volunteer. Like, well, you know, so, yeah, that's a really, really good, really good analysis. Okay, we have hands from Noah and Gabe. Let me just make one point. It's a bit of a side point. Let me just make it quickly. The Marachor Zeruah and Simon Rishon and Zion was asked about this cool case. I like that these yored questions actually are like they're all over the Shilas Teshuvos Svarim, which is nice. So you can see the Marachor Zeruah. Marachor Zeruah is Reb Chaim or Zeruah, the son of Reb Moshe or Zeruah. So the son of or Zeruah. He has this great tshuva about yeshiva bacharim. Even though we say osek b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah, osek b'talmud Torah is still chayiv in mitzvos because Talmud is supposed to be Mevili Deimaisa, right? This is I think the Marmad Katan and the Dharm talk about this. But the Marachor Zeruah says it's not true for yeshiva bachurim learning in yeshivas. I think I mentioned this in the past, right? He says like, even though Talmud Mevili Deimaisa and you're supposed to put aside your learning for Maisa, like it's not true if you're like a Talmud in yeshiva. It's like one of his interesting views. So he says here in this Marachor Zeruah Rishon in Zion, he was asked about Reuven, who had a claim against Shimon. Apparently there are partners in a house. And Reuven made substantive improvements, right? V'hine benisi bayis v'hishpachtiv, ad shehu shava yosar mikiflayim. So it sounds like Reuven made like serious improvements into the house. It's an interesting question. V'tainli chelkecha, and he wants to be compensated for that. He says, "Oh, I see Shimon. You really like my improvements, etc." M'Shimon meishiv lo amarti lecha livnos klum, v'masha shasakti l'fisha yisi savar shlo yisa tovea mimeni klum. Right, that's a pretty neat back and forth, right? Shimon says, "You know, I loved your improvements. I concede that." But I thought they were for free. That's why I love them. I wouldn't have loved them as much if I had to pay for them. So the Or Zeruah sides with Shimon. Shimon doesn't have to pay anything. He has a very interesting analysis, which we'll talk about later, but this Yored versus Shus question, which we haven't spoken about yet. And his main rationale seems to be Hadinim Shimon. Why? Because Sheyashav, I think Reuven bebayis kishir yitziosav the eno chayev lefra lo mos mizumanim. And again, yachal lomar lo teshe bebayis ad kedei yitziosecha. Here, the Marachor Zeruah thinks that Reuven actually recovered his investment by the benefit of living in the house for that amount of
money. I think you're thinking prospectively, not descriptively. He's saying that he can, and therefore that's where he will get it. Not that he has in the past already recovered his investment.
I mean, so it's sheyeshe bebayis kishir yitziyosav, and yachalom arteshev, all future tense, right? So, yeah, that's right. Meaning, it's perfectly okay to say that Shimon is going to recover his benefit through the schar being able to live there for a certain amount of time. Yeah, that's a good point, Zoldy. But this is just interesting to consider in terms of the range of remedies available for the Yorid. This is really distinct from the Nesivis and the Rosh B'Shem Arayvid remedy. The Arayvid's remedy is Yeshebo Ad She'yitin Yitziyosav, right? It sounds like you get to live there for free until the guy pays you. It doesn't say you deduct the benefit of living there. Marachar Zeruas, the Nesivis says you're Yorid L'Nechasav M'Shalom Lo, and he thinks it's wrong to force the guy to take compensation piecemeal. And the Marachar Zeruah thinks that you could do this kind of piecemeal
Itamar
for the Yorid. Yeah, let me just take the hands that were up already, and then I'll take your hands.
Cole. Sorry.
Yeah, so Noah, Gabe, then Cole.
Yeah. So like that going back to the first Nesivis, if that's okay. So one of the Z and I were talking a little bit about, like, you know, why the ability to say toll would be like limited to an instance where the Shebach can be recovered by the Yorid. So I think one way of thinking about it is like it's only fair. It's sort of like unfair for the Yorid to be like out that much. But I don't know, we were thinking about it in terms of like if you think of them as shutfim, then it could sort of like fit into like a god or igod framework of like either the Baal HaKarka buys out the Yorid and takes the Shebach for himself, or he just returns the Shebach and the he's not exactly go to Egod, but the Yorid takes back his Shebach.
Shafter gave Shir Kali and KBY like probably in 2012, and he said what you just said.
Okay, so
kind of like, yeah, Rav Shachter. Yeah.
Back in the days when Shua wore shirt sleeves, you know.
I'll tell you later why I remember it. But yeah, he explicitly made that connection. It may have actually, like, I think it was on it was the Sugyan about Basra. And he wanted to say kind of like good oh you good or all good, like we call it in KBY, Yorid.
What?
Zenon and Zelo Chaser, kind of like within the same framework of like taking it out, putting and like giving two people the option of how to deal with, like, either, I mean, one.
They're
or
all
the other.
They're all these kinds of shitfus, I guess.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So I think Noah's right. That works very nicely with saying that, you know, there's like this real property right that the Yorid gains by his labor, and now it's how to disentangle the joint property ownership, right?
In which case we would need to read the second, you know, if we want to go with that, then we would need to read the second Nesivis, I guess, in that light. But,
yeah, that's good. Meaning you can't force the Yorid to take back compensation beprodrot. Is that the idea? No?
Well, I think we were just trying to pit the Nesivis against the Rivid in the sense of, like, you know, the Ravid holds by like an idea of Shutfus and then Nesivis doesn't. I'm not so sure. That's what I was saying.
I see you're saying this, you think this is intention.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe the Nesivis just gets this idea because he's really committed to maybe he's just like really committed to the idea of Shechrusa da Shaisa and thinks that like just living in the chater is like is just, you know, accruing benefit, like money. So it sort of couldn't be that he would then get, you know, sort of like that's his argument with the Ravid. yeah, I don't know.
It's hard to know. Yeah, it's a little hard to know, but I definitely like the suggestion that you could use as a chalukah sashutvin, and then you have this like battery of ways of undoing the shutvus, right? You know, that I actually like that works nicely with, I think, that formulation in the Meiri that was troubling me earlier. Right? It's like lo nispayes be paying kashlumin, then you go for toleitz chavav anecha. Right? So the point is not that, like, here's the rule for what happens in a Yori case, right? You pay compensation, right? But a lot of it's just about what's the best way to undo this shutfus. And there are a few ways to undo it. One is by paying kashlumin. The other one is trying to, like, to divide it in half, right? Or take back the thing that you gained. I think there's something.
I just want to, like, the whole shutfus. So there's a Gemara that's quoted. It could be by the Rivash. Others call Yored Bereshus Keshutaf Dami, right?
Yeah. That's the Sugin Bava Basra.
Right. Where is that in Bava Basra, by the way?
Mem Gimel. You can see I have it in the. We'll talk about this Yored Bereshus, Mem Beis. Over here.
Oh, I know why I didn't see it. Oh, because we skipped Yesh and Oakland. Okay, fine. Yurita Birshus is kind of an uninteresting case in a sense, because it was Birshus.
Right.
But the I just want to, like, one crucial difference between partnership and between shutfus and Yerida Shalo Bershus is that the halacha is biased in partnership cases towards the maintenance and improvement of the partnership. Our goal is to keep these people together and the land improving and that affects compensation issue. In this case, the goal is kind of to dislodge the yored. In other words, like, the halacha's ideal solution, the claim that the yored has is basically like the yored's looking for relief from expense, in a sense. If the Baal HaBayis decides, like, you know, I'm happy to now that you've, like, made my field great, to bring you in as a full party, that's a new legal relationship, but it requires, you know, some kind of kinyan or something like that. But because it's not just mechila, it's more than that. A shutif has rights, and you need some kind of act to confer those rights. This is a debt that the Baal HaBayis has to pay off. That's a crucial difference between this and classic shutfus. In shutfus, discharging debts between partners don't dissolve the partnership. On the contrary, they advance the partnership. Here, discharging the debts actually dissolves the relationship between these two people.
It sounds like that's why it's like the good or all good question. You know, it's like,
I don't know what those, what case is that? Good. Oh,
it's like when you have a shutfus she'ein bo kedei chaluka, right? Something you can't just.
Oh, is that how you pronounce that?
Well, it's machlokas. Yeshua was telling us there are different versions, right? Good. Oh, good.
Yeah, I think in Yeshivat HaRetzion we say the. I never heard shir on that daf, which is, oh, that's right. When Karen Biavna learns Baba Basra, you learn all of Hashutfin bi'iyun, don't you?
I mean, awkward because it's in the first parak, but yeah.
No, all of Hashutfin.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, right, it's in the first parak. No, we don't. We learn Cheskas. We learn Cheskas when we do those.
Oh, okay. Recently, when Karen Biavna learned Baba Basra, I think you guys learned all. I think all of Hashutfin was learned, or like you got like way farther. It wasn't just Choref.
I think when I was there, exactly.
I think Elazar learned more of Hashutfin than you did.
Well, he for sure did. Anyway,
all right. Well,
who he is, but I think Reb Lachman said Shir through Daf Zayin, and then we went to Cheskas. I think.
Okay. So you did it. Okay. I think I am just as it is just as you are. You your knowledge of the pronunciation. I probably learned those prakim bichidus. That's why I didn't know how to say
that. Kulei alma lo pligi that it's good or good. It's just in the yeshivas we say good or good.
Uh-huh. It's like, yeah, there's certain terms like that. All right, anyway.
Let's say Gabe's hand. I just want to say, cool, I think the point here is, I think you're right in that. The halakha here is looking to disentangle the Yorit's claim from the Baal HaBayis's claim, right? It's not like there's no shalom bias. Like, the halacha is not interested in keeping these guys together when one person or imposes.
Or at least the relationship that they're in doesn't, is what, you know, it is similar to inheritance, actually, in that the halakha is looking for ways to dissolve the connection.
Yeah. That's right. All right, we have the Mishpachas Falk.
Yeah, each of us has something to say, but I'll start. On the Marachor Zarua, Yahir and I thought the Marachor Zarua is making a point, which is in line with the Meiri that we mentioned earlier, which is that you can't coerce somebody to pay from malus mizumanim. You can't force somebody to pay cash, which is like, so you can't be focused on somebody to pay cash because that's forcing them to part from their money without their consent. You can force them to sort of, you can obligate them monetarily, but not, but it has to be collected in other means, perhaps through the asset which you provided for them, which is like in the direction of the mirror, but not as far as me.
So you're saying that, let me just make sure I understand, you're saying that within the battery of remedies available, right, which is our preferred remedy, right? So you're saying that there's something here, a presumption against forcing somebody to pay bimizumin for a benefit they didn't request. That's the idea, Gabe? So like if anything, if there's a way to get to remunerate the yored without forcing the nene to come up with mizumin, that's gonna be our preferred remedy. That's why you're saying that's the parallel to the Meiri, where the Meiri said, in lo nispayes to pay up, well then we'll say reverse the benefit. Is that that's the idea? Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that. And that's in contrast, let's say, to the Nesivis, who said like, no, the primary remedy here is like yardin l'nechasev v'mishalman lo, right? That's a very nice, I like that. I like that suggestion a lot. I know it looks like you wanted to respond to that. Do you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I know. As long as you're talking about the subject of like methods of paying back, I was wondering, like, why is the Nesiva so allergic to the idea of, like, paying back piecemeal? Is that, like, a broader, is it sort of, like, a broader thing in, like payment laws and stuff like that?
Yeah.
It's, like, especially because it wasn't, like, you know, he sort of just went in without rishus. Right.
You see what's interesting is the Nesivas in both of these cases is very sympathetic to the Yorid, right? I mean, in both Nesivas pieces, he's sympathetic to the Yorid. Right, and you might wonder, like, what's wrong with him being mekabel at piecemeal? Shari hotzi ma'osa, right? He's work kachas. He's like worried about the equity for the yored. Yeah, it's an interesting question. Why is he so motivated by that? I don't know elsewhere. I don't know if we find this concern about paying back, you know, in pieces really as doesn't get much press separately in other areas of halacha. At least nothing that comes to mind offhand. Okay, so I want to now turn to the discussion of Eitzai Va'avanai Ani Notel. That's the flip side of our previous discussion. Does the Yored have the right to say that he's going to reverse the Hana that he conferred? Now, the Gemara seems to say that it depends, this is the Gemara here in Kapav Mabez, that it depends on what kind of thing the Yored worked on, right? Whether he could say Eitzai Avani Ani Notel. What's the Gemara's distinction here? Anybody want to walk us through the Gemara quickly?
Sure. So the Gemara, we say that the Yorid can take back his building materials if he built a bias. When Sada, when he planted trees, he cannot take back his saplings.
Yeah. So it depends what he worked on. In a bias, he could reverse it. In a Sada, we don't allow him to reverse it. Why?
Yeah, so it seems that allowing him to reverse it is the default, and we have to give a justification for why he cannot reverse it. So in the Sada, he cannot because of Yishuvar Tisral, I guess just like you want to have more fruit-producing trees planted. Alternatively, some sort of Kasha Da'ara. There's been some weakening of the Balakarka's land, so therefore he can't take out the trees.
Yeah, so let's start with the Yishuvar Tisral answer, because I think that's really the most intriguing. You know, it's rare to like pinpoint these kind of policy considerations in halakha where, you know, there's almost an acknowledgement where, look, by the pure equities of this situation, right, as between the parties, the yoreid, as you said, Zachariah, right, the yoreid should be able to say etzai v'avanyani notel. And then here, like, the Gemara walks in and says, well, there's this broader public interest that's going to override the equities between the parties. It's like a fascinating thing. It's hard to get these kinds of cases explicitly in the Gemara. And our case seems to be just a nice, crisp, clear example of this. What's further, sometimes we talk about these economic considerations. I wouldn't say on the face of it, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not obviously an economic consideration, although it may be, depending on how we interpret it. So what's the public interest here that's overriding, you know, the justice between the parties? Why are we forcing the Yoreid to relinquish his claim? The Gemara says Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So what is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? Tell us, Zachariah, about the Rimmel and Neil's interpretation here, if you had a chance to see it.
I didn't, but I can read it now. It says, Farsh Azul Taima Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Shiyu Aperos Merubin Ba'aretz, Vokir B'Hayoker Sham, Vitzruchu Yoshuveha Legalos Mimena. So you want a lot of fruits so that they go down in value, as in they're cheaper, and so that people don't have to leave Eretz Yisrael to sustain themselves.
Yeah. So a few things going on.
Here. What about the landlords and the farmers?
You're saying more what? Should be a public benefit also, Shua? Is that the idea?
I'm saying I think maybe Cole can make the argument better, but I think the laissez-faire, like conservative market response to this is like, well, then the farmers aren't going to make any money and the landlords aren't going to be able to pay their mortgages because we're, you know, and they may love the, yeah, whatever right. Bad. I don't know the rest of the thing. I usually stop reading at that point.
I have to say the intellectual laziness that is generally permissible when discussing conservative intellectual history is so vastly greater than the intellectual laziness permitted when discussing like critical race mishigas. It suggests either a discrepant degree of intellectual honesty or just more likely extremely poor grounding in the texts on the part.
This is one time where I'm going to be be conscious of everyone else's time. And if anyone wants to stick around after, I'm very interested to hear Cole's intellectually unlazy description of the history of critical race theory and see how well versed he is in the first three conferences and the foundational points, you know? But we can get to that.
The difference between you and me, Shua, is that I don't have opinions about things that I haven't read up about.
I Chazal say, Kol Zman Shebigdeim Aleihem Kunasam Aleihem. You know, I think once Shua dropped the gloves here, you know, he's really letting loose today. You know, it's he's going all out.
Imagine if we had him in a bathing suit. I don't imagine it actually.
So there are a few interesting points here in the Rimmel and Neil. So I mean, yeah, there is this interesting market assumption that Shua is pointing us to. So there's the assumption that the more fruit-bearing trees there are, the more fruits are available. The more fruits are available, the more costs or prices of fruits will go down, right? Lotar b'hayokar, hayokar sham. Now, to me, it's not clear if that's the interest. Is that the interest? Or is that a interest in and of itself to keep prices down in Eretz Yisrael? Or is the last thing the real interest? So like, what's the idea? Is the idea here that like we're worried that there's going to be a mass exodus? And it's like Vayered Mitzrayma because Kikaved Arav Baretz? Is that the concern? Is that people of Israel are going to leave And then there's like a real Yeshivaris problem. There's the idea that, like, look, if it's for the public good of the B'nai Eretz Yisrael, it makes Eretz Yisrael a more appealing place, you know, like they get their vaccines out faster and like the education's cheaper. Like these are all like Yeshiva Aretz concerns in that they draw people to Eretz Yisrael and keep people from leaving, right? I told you the joke about you go into a skyscraper in Manhattan. A guy gets into an elevator in a Manhattan skyscraper and he sees somebody else in the elevator and he sees the guy's Israeli and he wants to know if the elevator is going up and down. So he says, "That's how you raid." And the Israeli says, "Lo, shaliach." It's a classic oldie. So the question is the Gemara getting at like this real concern of like, you know, there's going to be a mass exodus from Israel, or is the idea that like to make Eretz Yisrael more of an appealing place, that's already a public value, like that the economy of Israel should be a produce fruits bizol. That's enough of a economic interest that would override the concerns of the justice between the parties. So anybody have thoughts on just what the right reading here is? Let me take some hands. Gabe, do you have it? Is this an old hand or a new hand? Old hand, Gabe? New hand?
Sorry, that's an old hand.
Okay, so let's take Zachariah and Adin's hand.
Maybe this is kind of like prior to this. Like, why are we assuming when the Yored's taking his stuff back that he's not going to be planting these trees? Like, I thought this was a really wild case of a policy concern because it's like really temporary. It's like we can't. It's like has to be a ratchet that only goes in one direction. Like we can't abide any temporary or even possible decrease of produce in the land of Israel. Like, I don't know.
To back up Zachariah's point, the whole beginning of the Gemara with the waves or the storm, like that also seems like even if you want to say like, oh, he came to the Yored came to the field, so like obviously he doesn't have his own field or something. I don't know. Like we see that Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael is still a concern even in scenarios where both have the ability to plant.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're saying like, why can't he just plant it somewhere else or something like that? I guess
the net gain of fruit is the same or whatever. The net economic level is the same.
Well, I suppose the argument is that if the Yored wants a fruit tree now, he's going to have to go and plant another one. Right, so now we're gonna end up having two
trees. Take that fruit tree and then pick it up.
But then you're stuck with one fruit tree. Right, if the Yored wants a fruit tree for his field now, he's gonna have to plant another one. So he's gonna be induced to plant an additional one.
Saying like the Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael is like to get people to plant double the amount that they would have.
It's not right, yeah. It sounds like Shayu Aperos Merubin Baretz. Right, that seems to be the underlying goal for the Remilonil.
Okay, so I think you can see Merubin as, right, you're saying it's more of a net increase, whereas I think we're saying it's more of not a decrease. That we're saying since we're moving one tree from here to there, there's no net decrease. So fruits are getting destroyed as opposed to saying we need both the Yored and the Baal to plant trees.
Right, not that we need, but like, yeah, like this policy will incentivize more tree planting overall, right? Something like that. Yeah. Let me just point out there are other iterations of this. Let me take the other hands here. So we have Adin and Zolti with hands.
Yeah. So I don't know if I have any insight into the like what's behind like the meaning of Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael, but I think in terms of like going back to, I think it was Zachariah mentioned earlier, like in terms of how we understand the market considerations or the general public good considerations and how we weigh that versus the Yored's ability to be Meitil Etzim Vavanim, like you've been using it a lot about like restoring justice, whereas like I'm not like that could cloud the like in terms of just like maybe we have like so we have some objects that like it's unclear like. Nah, I can't formulate. I'll try to reformulate this one. It doesn't make sense in my own head yet.
Sure. No rush.
I do think, I intuitively, Oh, Evan has a fan. A hand. That'd be a...
No, Shula, go. Mine more tangible.
I mean, I have a wonderful habit of never raising my hand. So I think I should at least respect the process every once in a while.
Maybe we're afraid what we'll see if you raise your hand.
I was just going to say, I think Mosca, that is totally an intuition, and so it's probably hard to interrogate, but I think just the baseline grammatical read is that the focus is on people not leaving Eretz Yisrael, right? Because just in terms of the language of what Yishuv Eretz Yisrael means, and then the kind of like how he reflects that back in it's like, here these guys are being Yoshev, and now they're gonna have to, like, the Yoshvim are gonna have to leave. So I think it's just a much larger jump to think of it as like a specific policy term. It's probably a much broader, like, and it's to me, that's just very interesting, because I think it opens questions to, like, I think this is very exciting to, because it's a biblical policy, right? But I think that it's interesting that, like, sounds to me at first read that the idea is like, the more people we have living here, the better, right? Like, yeah. Not necessarily the more functional the economy is, not necessarily like the more the wealthier, like the GDP is higher. It's just like the more people.
It's Darfi Yoshua Legalos in right now. That's
right, which is interesting.
So I would push back a little bit on Shua. You see, what's at stake here is what kinds of, like, public policy concerns, or which bedrock values override the considerations of, like, the justice between the parties, right? That's really what's at issue here. I want to draw your attention to this Meiri. The Meiri is actually on the Sugya.
Wait, but how do you explain the Gemara? Isn't it clear that it's clearly about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael referring to, like, keeping people in Israel, since that, like, the Gemara has, like, my nafkamina between the two answers? Nafkamina whether or not it applies in Chutzlarts. So if it's about, like, a larger economic policy that generally just want to keep fruit prices low, so wouldn't that apply equally in Chutzlarts as well? Like, why would that be only in Eretz Yisrael commercial market demand?
Yeah, that's also the Meiri's. So that's going to be let's look at the Meiri's argument. I think the Meiri's going to address that concern, Yoni. The Meiri here says, and this is a response to Zolti on Kufam Abayz. So this is in the case of the olive tree that gets blown into someone's field. Could you say, Zesai ani notel? Be'eretz Yisrael ein shomim lo. Why? Mishim chivav yoshveha. The Meiri says, V'yesh poskin kain ach b'chutz al aretz. V'mefarshim b'shmu azu, Eretz Yisrael karka shel Yisrael. So the Meiri here rereads, at least according to this Yesh poskin, that... Mishim Yishuva Eretz Yisrael doesn't mean like the land of Israel, like in Shua's sense of like the more people living in Eretz Yisrael, the better. It's referring to Jewish communities, right? So even in Chutz La'aretz,
what is the Chutz La'aretz case then? So what is the non-Jewish community that they're referring to? Like, you're raised into a non-Jewish property? Like, what is the reverse, the opposite case?
I think it's like, Teaneck or Brooklyn, right, or the five towns, versus like a place where there are no Jews, like Cleveland or something. That was my shout out to Gabe. I don't know if he heard. If you live in Cleveland where there's like no Jews, then there's no Yishuv Haaretz consideration. Let's see.
Rambam takes out the word Eretz Yisrael, just as Yishuv Haaretz. I'm not sure if.
Yeah, exactly. And go ahead, Zachariah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. He just quotes the exact Gemara of the Zesim, and he just says, I posted it there. Shatavnar Zesav, which Salam Besuch Stechavero, Vamar Hala Zesaini Notel, and Shomin Lo Mishum Yishuv Haaretz.
That's right. So you might say the Haaretz with the Hey Hayidia just means, like, but yeah, the Orsa Meach has your Diak. I put it on here. I'll add the Rambam's formulation here. The Orsa Meach quotes the Rambam, and he says, that's exactly your diak, right?
Z and I did like a little search a couple weeks back of like where Yishuvaharetz comes up in the Rambam. Looks like there are a couple, please. So, like, one of them is, like, Hilchos Deos, about, like, Netira, which, like, wouldn't be connected to Eretz Yisrael. But it seems like there's a place where actually the Rambam says Yishuv Eretz Yisrael explicitly, kind of, you know, indicating that, like, elsewhere when he says Yishuv Haaretz, you know, maybe you could read it. It's not talking specifically about Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, that would be consistent. That would be very consistent with this Meiri's reading, right? And that's where the Or Sameach is going here. You could even say, he says, Ein lomar de kavanos habein Eretz Yisrael dafka, and even quotes the Shin Kubetzas here, v'chazinan de v'chol makom she'Yisrael mitzuyim kiel rabbeinu b'lashon Yishuv Haaretz. So Yishuv Haaretz doesn't mean like, you know, it's like the Israelis at Gush will tell Cole, like, oh, of course, it's about Yishuv Haaretz and the land and the Kedushas Karka and Zrayim, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But like Rameir Simcha is saying that, no, Yishuv Haaretz is sometimes just a way of talking about, like, it's good, for, like, it's important for the development of the Jewish community. I b'chol makom she'im.
That was a weird tone in which you said that the Yeshivat Haaretzion was ascribed the close, tight reading of the text, and then the deflationary, sober tone of voice was given to this wild invention. I mean, I just think the obvious way to read this Gemara is that, first of all, there's no mention of fruit. I just want to say this whole like, you know, we need, you know, more fruit. That's like the Remillennials Kiddush. The Gemara talks about trees. The simple reading of this Gemara is just like developing the land is important.
It's a tzaddik hole. I don't think that we don't call that a Baha'i garden. Cole, why are you planting trees if you're not for the fruit? Like, you're not here for the
fruit. Yoni, did you know? I don't know if you. Yoni, I don't know if you've ever been to a like an evergreen forest, but most of the trees in the world are not fruit bearing. There are many reasons to plant trees that have nothing to do with fruit.
People don't plant trees in like their backyard or in their fields for because it's like a nice forest unless they're like wealthy. Yes, like,
you're just like that's just the dumbest thing you've said this week. There are many reasons to plant trees that have nothing to do with fruit. Maybe you want the timber. Maybe you want the shade. But it doesn't matter. The Gemara is not interested in those considerations. All it talks about is trees. Okay. So
I don't think for the real reason, it doesn't matter whether it's fruit. I mean, it could be like let's say trees make Eretz Yisrael more appealing. You know what I'm saying? Like let's say. Sometimes you walk into like New York and there are no trees, right? So if Eretz Yisrael had beautiful trees everywhere, that would be appealing and that would stop
people. I think Cole is missing the forest for the trees, right? Like Jewish communities outside of Eretz Yisrael also need timber and shade and all the other things.
So there might be a particular halachic value to improving this slice of land because in reality, as opposed to in liberal world, particular bits of land matter to people.
Okay, Ben Shapiro, we can plant a tree in your honor.
Yeah, Ben Shapiro was a Lockean, okay? This is just like Aleph Beis. I don't know what they're saying. Okay, the land matters. Land matters because it's ours.
Well, look what the Or Sameach here closes to.
Improving it
is
a Jewish value. Yeah.
There are some that quotes Shita Kubetas in our sugya, and he says, after he quotes this idea that b'chol makom she'Yisrael mitzuyam kiel rabbeinu b'lashon Yishuv Haaretz, which is a very, very important idea, he says, Matzasi b'Shita Kubetas in Kuf Aleph, in Bab Mitzia, studying the Ramach, v'hu hadin b'chutzal aretz ein shomim lo. In chutzal aretz also you don't have the right to undo it. D'ro yishama livnos batim. And he cites Yirmiya, b'nu batim initu kramim. He said, oh, maybe it's Dafka and Babel. But like the underlying idea sense you get here is that, you know, it's not like Shua said it's just about having people in Eretz Yisrael, making sure people aren't leaving. Once you generalize outside of the Eretz Yisrael context, it's almost like an economic consideration, right? It's really for the benefit of the community. And that itself is a reason to block the Yored from undoing the benefit that he conferred. Anybody have thoughts on this? Thoughts on this principle?
I mean, you could directly extend that pretty far. Even if you're not planting trees, even if you're improving something internally in the house. Just by increasing one house's value, you increase the value of all houses in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's right. Let's say you make an improvement in a house and that somehow increases the something in the neighborhood. It's an argument, right? That might work under this theory of Yishuv Yisrael, right, Adam?
Yeah, theoretically.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a really interesting view. Noah, you have a thought on this?
Maybe it's sort of like a similar camp as the Sma that was quoted in the Nesivis earlier, the second Nesivis earlier, about like sort of the inability to like Tawanahu Mevakish, like, you know, pull a Shimshon and just do destructive things for no reason. Sort of like if I, you know, put my trees in your property and they're going to be really valuable and I just don't feel like, you know, benefiting you or doing a productive act, but instead want to take them back, then that's, you know, something that the halacha is not interested in me having the ability to do.
Yeah. So why do you think the halacha is not interested in you having that ability?
It's not nice. I don't know.
Why?
It's mean. Yeah, no, I'm not sure. Maybe, you know, it could be like, it's like a midas tzedom idea. Like, it's sort of, you know, maybe everybody is responsible for each other.
Midas tzedom has been like so social, abused in the halakhic socialist literature.
Get alone. Yeah, I don't know. It's like a general idea that, like, it's, yeah.
I don't know if this is how you meant it, but that's like, it's on point. Like, the sugya of midas tzedom is bedafka, right? Like chiyuvim of shutfin to each other, and like how you're meant to put other people's best interests first, and kind of like the economic considerations of like, it's the same good all good. It's literally in between the sugya of zen and zol chaser and good all good is midas tzedom, right? Like it's all part of the same thing. So I would not necessarily consider this a misuse of the, at least of the meta concept.
Fair enough. Adam, you have a comment here?
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it's sort of becoming a little reminiscent of the beginning of Bava Batra. It's a discussion of who's responsible for the cost of building a fence between two properties. Like, Stam, if one person wants it, because it directly improves the value of their property and directly improves the value of the other property, then they're both who you have to pay for it.
Yeah, so that's consistent with, I think, the line that, Noah and Zachariah and Shua were all suggesting that this is very similar to the shoot to the Shutfin discussion. 100%. Okay, so the other day in the Gemara, less exciting, is just the Kaksha Da'ara reason, that maybe a reason why the Yorid can't say Eitzai Vavanamani Notel, at least in the Sada, is Shekvar Hikrishu Hanatios is a Sada Shiyan Kamimanu. So there's something about like the fact that the Balabayas already suffered some sort of loss, or the Balabayas already supported these plantlings. That's like a reason why the Yorid can't just say, I'll reverse it. He could reverse it if it comes at no cost to the Balabayas, but we're not going to force the Balabayas to shoulder this cost of Kachsha Da'ara to allow the Yorid to just reverse the benefit that he conferred. So I think there's less stuff that's interesting here than in the day of that it's Mishum Yishuv Aretz. And the Yishuv Aretz example is interesting, that this economic or this policy or this mitzvah consideration of Yishuv Aretz will override the Yorid's entitlement. And Kachsha Da'ara, it seems more narrowly between the parties, this notion that it would be inequitable to allow the Yorid to undo it if it's going to come at this cost to the Baal Bayis. I do want to say there's some discussion about Ahronim here. That, like, why can't the Yorid just reverse it and pay the cost of Kachsha Da'ara as he's undoing it? And I haven't found a good answer yet in the Ahronim for that.
It could be we just don't want land to be damaged.
Yeah, like another, like just protecting the Balakarka's
property. We just don't want land to be damaged. We just have an interest in land not being damaged because it's land.
So that's like equivalent to Yishuv Aretz, right? It's
yeah, it could be preserving the Yishuv Aretz intuition in a broader, but
in the second day.
Yeah. I like the concept that just nafkamina between those two things would be whether the ball boss prefers it, right? And that I think is like it's not obvious. My intuition would be that if the ball bias says you rip them up or I'll rip them up, like that'll work. It's hard for me to imagine that we would say no mishum kach shadar, neither of them can do it. So then kind of like
because everybody agrees that, the ball bias can do it.
Well, so then because of that, I assume what we're protecting here then is a situation where the Baha bias isn't, we're kind of like giving the Baha bias.
Wait, cool. You're saying that everyone agrees the Baha bias could say Tol Eitz Chava Vanecha?
No. The Baha bias can do whatever he wants on his own land. The question is whether he can, according to Rav Nachman, whether he can get the other guy, whether he can compel the other guy to do it. I would assume that the difference would be that it's the Baha bias is, I mean, maybe nobody finds this compelling. I see some logic to it. It's the Baal Abayas' property. He can do whatever he wants with it. You know, we have a Baal Tashchis Isser, but basically you're allowed to do what you want with your property. But to get a guy who is responsible for improving the land, right? There's, you know, like, just like think about it from the halacha's perspective. Like if this Yored's relationship to the land is that of somebody who is looking to, like, I don't know, disinterestedly improve it, it would seem perverse for him to be forced to reverse course like that. I don't know. It's like, it would be like, I mean, it's weird to say this, but like, you know, what they say in pluralistic Jewish day schools about like, lo tevashel gediba chalevi mo, right? Which is not, no, but it's important to like that vort, which maybe there's like some Maimar Chazal about it. It's like you're using the life-sustaining mechanism of the kid as the vehicle of its death. So that's like, there's something just intuitively perverse about that. So too, like forcing the guy who, I don't know, I think this way. I see these are not legal categories. They're you know, they're aesthetic almost, but I see something kind of almost cruel about forcing somebody whose goal was to improve something to then damage it as a way of recompense.
Good, you know, the gush is always looking to tap the human side of halacha over there.
But I see what I just said makes sense to me. I wish I had a firmer grounding for it although I do think it backs up the, I think I have the legal facts correctly. Uncontroversially, the Baal Abayas can rip up the trees, but to force it. But by the way, maybe he can only rip up the trees because, you know, the assumption is he's going to improve the field. In other words, right. Like the,
it's
but
a
the Yored's relation,
not a stay long.
Yeah. Yeah. No. But the Yored's relationship to the field is exhausted by this kind of weird incursion.
You're saying?
I find what I said philosophically compelling. If someone wants to disagree with it, I won't take it personally.
Should I like that?
Go ahead, Adam.
I mean, I think that works also well if you think about specifically from the perspectives of the Baal Abayas and the Yored, that this issue of settling the land affects the Baal Abayas' ability to really be able to retract and force the Yored to take everything away. Versus on the other hand, it affects the Yored in the sense that you're weakening the land if you remove the trees. So it's like from both angles, it gets it according to like Cole's reading of it. Like either way, they're sort of doing this thing that just seems wrong.
Yeah. I want to cover one last point here. So these are the two points. I want to cover one last point here today. And that is this discussion. So we know that from the Gemara that the Yored can say Eitzai Vavanyani Notel, either Yishavaretz or Kach Shadara. And as Cole gives this interesting reason, there's something perverse about the guy who's Yored to be Mashviach causing this kind of Kechashara, right? Cole, that's like the, right? Like the Ein Kategar Nasa Sanegar argument.
Oh, there you go. Oh, nice. I like that. Good.
Yeah. Or like either you're Yored and Mashbiach, or
no, the halacha has this intuition that you know.
That's right. So what about the case where what's the scope of his right to reverse it when there's no concern of when there's no concern of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael or Kechesh Ara. So the Ran here in our sugya says, Amar Halah Eitzan Avan Mani Notel Shomim Lo, Vasikna Devabaya Shomim Lo. Right? So in a house, the argument is that there's no Kechesh Ara. Let's just take that as an empirical assumption. There's no Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Take that as an empirical assumption. Arguably, if those empirical assumptions change, so it's like, if there's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael concerns in a house, or if there's Kechesh Ara concerns in a house, right, like the foundations are going to destroy the land or something, then arguably the Poel, the Yoed, wouldn't be able to say Eitzai Vavan Yani Notel. But let's assume that those concerns don't hold normally in a bias. So the Ran wants to know whether there's a difference between a Sadeh HaAsui Alita and a Sadeh She'en HaAsui Alita. And he says, Ikaman da amar dahani mili b'churva she'ena asuya livnos. Aval b'churva ho asuya livnos ain't shomim lo. Maybe, even in a bias, the yored has no right to demand to reverse the benefit, eitzai vavan ani notel. Why? Dimiyad zacha bal hakarka bibinyan. It's a pretty interesting view. The bal hakarka acquires the binyan right when the yored starts building. So this takes on our property rights question head on. The Ran seems to hold here that if it's a sadeh ha'asui alita, that means that the karka swallows up the property of the yored. You know, Zacharia came in, right? Zacharia earlier today was coming in saying, no, what do you mean? It's the materials of the yored. It's the labor of the yored. Who cares that it's done in the property space of the balakarka. And the Ran here seems to be arguing, at least in the Sada Asui Alita, miyad zacha balakarka b'binyan. It's an interesting view. And he says, shemitchila al das kein bina. Not sure what that has to do with it. That sounds like an empirical assumption, maybe. We'll hold off on that phrase for a second. Saval b'churva she'eno asui alivnos. So he thinks that like whether or not the Baal HaBayis is zoche right away in the materials and the structures, etc., will depend on whether it's asuya lita or eno asuya lita. Does that sound plausible? I mean,
I think that makes an enormous amount of sense. I want to make a prior point that will shed light on it.
One second, Cole. Let me just get out the other never. And then I think your point will shed light on both of them. Because I think the other sheet I think is really just a broader application of this first sheet. Then I'll give the floor back to you in a second. The Ran quotes the Rashba here as disagreeing and holding that even in a churva ha asuya livnos. It's an interesting shita. And he says the reason why should the balakarka says demeam ani nosein, why should that give him an automatic winning claim to the stuff? And the Rashba says, "Tekivan sheratza halah zacha ze b'shvilo, b'hachanami kivan shenisratza zichza lo chatsero, v'shuv ein halah yachal lafzerbo." It's just interesting that he points this idea of a kinyan chatser. That this is like a response to Zachariah's earlier point. The balakarka could claim at least so by default there might be one rule, right? By default, it's the yored's right to take back. But he could assert his property right and say, he could force the yored to have to relinquish his claim through asserting his kinyan chatzer. So it's really interesting mingling of different property claims. So the Ran himself says, this ikaman da'amar, is that in a sada suya lita, it's automatically the balakarkas, because he's zocha, the balakarka is zocha in the binyan. In a sada she'ena suya lita, the poel has the right to reverse it. The Rashba seems to think that no matter what, the Poel by default has the right to reverse it. But that could be defeated by the Baal HaBayis like asserting his property claim if he wants to pay for it. Like a zichza lo chatzero in a case where he's willing to pay for it. Okay, Cole, what do you want to say?
So the way you're, maybe I just want to propose that we also, you've been just for the last hour and a half, which makes an enormous amount of sense, trying to figure out how much of a claim the Yoraid retains on the stuff that he's planted. Just wanted to highlight to the extent that the Balabais owns, okay, whatever the Yoraid has planted, that constricts the Balabais as well as the Yoraid, because you can't you can't order somebody to take your property. In other words, the tension that we should think about in this sugya has to do with like how stable is either party's connection with the items in the field. In the cases in which, to the extent you think that if it's Nitan Le, the most extreme case is where it's Birshus, it's Nitan Litan, and so on and so forth. There, after the Yored plants, it doesn't even make sense to ask the question of whether the Balabais could force the Yored to reclaim his stuff. Meaning just the more you say there's a property claim on the Balabais' side, the less you're actually going to say that the Balabais has the ability to require the Yored to reclaim his stuff. There's an analogous point to be made about a halva b'mashkon. So the Ran, for instance, thinks that a halva b'mashkon is not nitan l'mechila. The reason is that you own the mashkon. Right. So ownership constrains the owner as well as the Yoreid. That's just a point I wanted to make that I think is helpful for putting these positions on a spectrum.
100%. Meaning you're saying that there's going to be, the shitas are going to have to align, right? Whoever owns the thing will be barred from making certain claims
right.
Tol Eitzchav Avanecha is not Eitzchav Avanecha anymore.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yoni thinks that I'm misreading the Ran about Halva'a or the Ran here. I wasn't making a point about the Ran here. I was making kind of a broader theory.
No, not you, Itamar. I think you've mispresented or underpresented some parts.
All right. Anyway, I wanted to make that point because I think it's helpful for seeing how well which Rishonim do with rich instabilities in the relationships on either side.
It's a good point. Let me follow up on that quote, and then we'll get to Yoni's point. If you look at it, this Rav Haigon that we've been seeing in a few different ways, Sil Zayin Yedches, look what he says. He says, there's some dispute about how much the benefit is worth. Imratza oso shebona sachurba sheyakor eitza v'avana. The Yachsi is a karkamosha, the Eno Rotze Limkor Libal Hachurva Osehotza Shehotzi. Look at that phrase. He talks about being mocher, like he's talking about the Yoraid selling the thing to the Baal Hachurva. It's an interesting way to conceive of what's going on, right? So the Yoraid's selling his thing to the Baal Hachurva. That assumes that the Yoraid retains the fundamental property ownership of the thing. Right. Let's see. Which is different from the way the Ran seems to be talking about it, that the Baal HaKarka is just zoche to the thing through his karka claim. Right. The Eino Rotze Limkor LeBaal HaKurva Oso Tzashahoti Adin Imo. Okay, but Zolt, what did you want to say in the Ran? Right here says Miyaz.
Yeah, I just think that I think with some you brought a bowl the next part afterwards that Shmitzila al Datkin Benar, that kind of what the difference between the Ran and the Rashba going on is a question of what the Yoraid is thinking throughout. Is that in the case the Ran's argument is that the Chorba She'ena Chorba Suya live note. The reason that the Balakarka is able to be Zoka is because that's what the Yoraid wanted originally. And in the case of Korba Shainas, I leave notes, the Yoraid did not want it originally. Al-Dat Glito Kolosot, he planned on being able to take it back out. So what matters for the run is all about the das of the yored. And the Rashford doesn't really dispute that fact. All he's disputing, at least in the presentation the Ron has, is just that the dot of the yored is that is not that that the balakarka is zoche right away, but he's only zoche when the guy's willing to pay for it. So when the guy's willing to pay for it, then he's able to be zoche through kinyan chaser. But until then, he's not zoche. But like the dispute there is this question of like what the dot of the yored is as to when the guy should take possession of this property. It's like all of it is within the das of the yored and what he wants and what and when he wants the kinyan to happen.
It could be. I definitely hear that reading. That works out nicely with you're right. I think to me the problem with that reading is that it seems a little arbitrary to just assume that in a sadasi alita we could by default just posit that the yored's das is Almenas Sheyizke Balakarka, and you said Sheina Suyalita, it's Almenas Lemocholo, right? Or Almenas Lito Kolotzoza. To me, like that empirical assumption just seems a little too tenuous if it doesn't follow from something deeper, which is the rightful claim that a Balakarka has in a case of a Sada Suyalita. So like the reason why the das of the poel is going to be framed that way is because of some anterior fact that the Baal HaSadeh has a claim to the thing in a Sada Suyalita, whereas in a Sada Sheina Suyalita, he just has like a right to buy it off the poel. You see that? So it's not...
I don't think... I get your point.
The question is which is more fundamental, right? Is the das of the poel more fundamental than the property claim of the Baal HaSadeh, or is the Baal HaSadeh's property claim just parasitic off the das of the poel? That's our disagreement, right?
Right. I mean, I understand your point. I think that, like, I'm just like more akin to the text of the writer himself, and the fact that I don't think it's such a hard stretch to suggest that the poel, when he's that the yored, when he goes to different fields, he knows a yored field which is a suyalita. Like, it's not so hard to assume. If he was a suyalita, maybe the guy's going to want to keep it. So that's his job, to give him, like, a gift of sorts or make a sale. And a suyalita, you know, it's going to be a temporary thing anyways. He's just trying to make a short benefit from it without – it's going to not last very long.
Interesting. I hear the argument. I definitely hear the argument. Yeah, Kira, you have a hand on?
I think the Ron is just focusing on the das of the yored here, because the ascent in this case, the ascent of the balakarka is not in question. The balakarka is very happy with it. This is the case where the yored is the one who wants to reverse it. So that's the only reason he's testing what the das of the yored was.
He's talking about when the kinyan happened. The kinyan is happening all based upon what the das of the yored is, not the das of the. I mean, maybe the guy wants to keep it anyways, but maybe you need also das of the balakarka. But definitely, like, the whole focus here is all about das of the yored.
Yeah, no, I agree he's focusing on das of the yored. I just think that's incidental to the fact that that's what's in question in this case. I mean, in general, you need both das for, you know, we need both das for both das of both parties for the kinyan. And it just happens to be in this case, what's in question is the das of the yored. So that's what he's focusing on. I'm not sure that too much should be made of that. Yeah,
do you agree in the Rashba's, at least within the Rashba here, he does think that the Balakarka could compel the Yored to like cede ownership to the materials and the binyan, right? Because Kivan Shenisratza Zichsalo Chatsero.
Yeah. Again, that's because both parties have das, and we need to reconstruct the Ored's das, because that's the Ored's das as agreeing that the sale will go through once the Balakarka is Nisratza specifically. Yeah.
All right, let's give Zolt. Noah, do you have a hand also on this? Is that an old hand? Old hand. Okay, so let's stop here. Let me just say, we're going to wrap up our sugya here in the next day or so. But I want to discuss next chavura is the distinction between, just to wrap up our discussion and add a little more on the distinction between sadasuyalita and enasuyalita. Let's just hammer out the nafgamina between Sadasiyalita and Sadashenasiyalita. We've seen some today in the previous Kaburas. And also the distinction between, as Cole said, the interesting case of Yorid Shelo Bershus and the case of Yorid Bershus. That comes up in Baba Basra. We saw this right in the Tshuva of the Rivash, right? Is Yorid Bershus, it's still interesting because let's say the Gemara says that a Shutef is Yorid Bershus Dami. If we're partners and I make improvements, I have a right to make the improvement, but does that give me the right to impose the costs on you? So Yorid Bershus could still be pretty interesting. So let's talk about that distinction, Yorid Bershus, Yorid Shelo Bershus, Asiyalita, Eino Asiyalita. That'll tie back into some of the level of compensation questions. And also I want to talk about separately this question of who has the burden of proof to show that this was a benefit? Can the Baal HaBayis like put up a sign in advance saying like no benefits requested here? Things like that. How easy is it to wiggle out of the was this a benefit conferred question? That's a separate conversation. And I think that'll basically wrap up our discussion of Yorid. All right?
Is there like a related question? Like when is it like mazik? Like is the reverse of it not being a benefit that you're being mazik in some ways the property? Like makrish ara?
What do you mean?
As in like, I think like a Yorid Shelo Bershus. So on the one hand, like you're, you know, maybe you're benefiting the karka in some way, but I think the reverse of benefiting the karka is not necessarily like a net zero, but also potentially a chance of like you're actually harming the ground. Maybe like your plants inside or someone's harming the ground, you know, taking away some nutrients that you didn't want to be taken away. And that's like the Zikin issue.
Yeah, correct. I think for sure. I think the Baal HaKarka can make an argument that you're a mazik, right? You'd have to show that. But if in fact you could show that this field was going to like have an apple harvest and you started planting wheat, yeah, there's a TS Nazikin to be had. Yeah, I agree.
Right. So I think it's part of the discussion here about like the determining whether there was a nah conferred or not, also determining whether or not there was like Nazikin potentially.
100%. Yeah. It's a very related question. I agree. All right, Shkaf Zolt, enjoy your outing.